हेलो फ्रेंड्स, मैं प्रशांत कुमार पांडे। आई एम नाउ गोइंग टू रिकॉर्ड द टॉपिक बेन जॉनसन्स कॉमेडी ऑफ ह्यूमर। द वर्ड ह्यूमर, द टर्म ह्यूमर कम्स फ्रॉम द एंशियंट ग्रीक फजीसियंस एंड लेटर फ्रॉम द मेडिवल सिस्टम ऑफ मेडिसिन। दिस सिस्टम एनविसेज्ड फोर मेजर ह्यूमर करस्पॉन्डिंग विद द फोर एलिमेंट फायर, एयर, अर्थ एंड वाटर, द पोसेसिंग द क्वालिटी रिस्पेक्टिवली ऑफ हीट, कोल्ड, ड्राइनेस एंड मॉइस्चर। द कॉम्प्लेक्शन, टेम्परामेंट और कॉन्स्टिट्यूशन ऑफ अ मैन डिपेंडेड ऑन द प्रोपोर्शनेट एलियंस ऑफ द ऑफ फॉर ह्यूमर और सबल जूसेस इन हिज बॉडी। द प्रीडोमिनेंस ऑफ द मॉइस्ट ह्यूमर कॉज अ मैन टू ग्रो सेंजुइन, ऑफ द हॉट टू ग्रो क्लरिक एंड सो ऑन। The prevailing idea with the psychologist was that an unhealthy body there was a natural balance of all the four humor, and that a disturbance of the balance was dangerous and needed to be checked. In Elizabethan times, says Ifer Evans in A Short History of English Literature, this medieval physiology was not treated with the complete seriousness, but its vocabulary became a popular fashion in sophisticated conversation, and this again Johnson's exploited. Elizabethan interpretation. Humor, apart from its currency in the medieval profession, was also a catchword when Ben Jonson began to write, but his contemporaries used the word from any passing mood, him, whim, fancy or caprice and not. And Ben Jonson did for a more or less permanent and predominant peculiarity of disposition. Shakespeare, like the rest, used the word in the sense of mood and fancy. For instance, in the Richard III, we have, was ever woman and his humor wooded, was ever woman and this humor won. Again, in the Merchant of Venice, when Shylock is asked whether he prefers a pound of the flesh of Basino's heart of the sum of 3,000 ducats, and replies, "That is my humor." Johnson's interpretation. Ben Jonson dissociated himself from this degenerated meaning of the word humor, took it back to its original physiological sense, and fitted it into the context of his concept of the nature and function of comedy. Just as a man has in his physique a dominant humor, similarly he has in this psyche a dominant passion. Under the influence of this dominant passion, a man may become, as the case may be, greedy, jealous, cowardly, despicable, foolhardy, and so forth. As Johnson clarified in the prologue to Every Man Out of His Humor, he was talking the word humor from medicine and was using it as a metaphor for the general disposition of a man, that is his psychological setup. He explained that when some one peculiar quality doth so possess a man that it doth draw all his affect, his spirits and his powers, and their confluxions all to run one away, this may truly be said to be an humor. The purpose of comedy. Ben Jonson's comedy is called the comedy of humor, as it's aimed primarily at the representation of such characters as were motivated mainly to entirely by their peculiar dominant passion or humor. Jonson felt that in the word of a critic, the purpose of comedy is to note those elements in human character which are either naturally and permanently dominant in each man, or which on occasion in the hazard of life overflow and exceed their limit at the expense of the other contributing element, to represent a number of character differently humored in and in the class of contrast to paint with pleasant laughter. The moral of these disorders, a man whom we call avaricious, A-V-A-R-I-C-I-O-U-S, because avarice, to use, is his most striking characteristic, and to him his most absorbing humor may either preserve the established proportion of his dominating quality in all distilling or under stress of living in a peculiar set of circumstances, let it grow at the expense of their qualities. In the first case, he may be said to be in his humor, and in the second, to be out of his humor. Both are excellent material for comic dramatization, and the question is one of degree. The latter is the more tempting to the playwright, not merely because excesses give him more striking stage effect, but because it serves his ethical purpose better because of the enormity of its magnitude. You know, that comma closed. The comedy of humor had a highly didactic aim, which was sought to be realized through satire leveled at various humors. Whereupon is a satire on cupidity and depravity of human character. The Alchemist on greed, Bartholomew Fair on hypocritical Puritan, The Silent Woman on jittery melancholy, afraid to of noise, The Staple of News on irresponsible newsmongering and uncultured craving for thrills, and so on. It was not without reason that Ben Jonson characterized more than one of his comedies as comical satires. Is Jonson an imitator? We have not so far referred to Jonson's indebtedness to classical dramatists in arriving at his concept of comedy of humor. It was partly his classical instruction and taste which led him to this concept. But it is a popular misrepresentation to assert that Jonson was a mechanical imitator of the Roman comic dramatist Plautus and Terence. There is no doubt that in Latin comedy, to quote Ifer Emmons, each character belonged to the recognizable type and maintained throughout certain well-defined attributes. However, as a critic observed in noted comma, it is really a strange critical error to hold that the Jonsian conception of the dramatic humor is only an English copy of Plautian and Terencian type of that his braggarts and gulls and misers were but Romans in doubtless and rough. In noted comma closed. Jonson was no transcriber. He acknowledged no man his master. His dramatic art came not from the study of literature but the study of life. His insistence that comedy should be real and English comedy should be English and real was meant partly to dispel the charge that his comic art was merely literary, for removed from life and only as scholars appear. His native vigor and originality save him from being treated as a mechanical transcriber. He was a redoubtable scholar, but what is more important, he was, in the word of David Dacey, a critical history of English literature, and noted comma, also a reused Englishman with a sardonic relish for the varied and colorful London life of his day. He showed enormous and impressive originality even when most closely following classical model or applying rule from classical theory or practice. Take an example. Most of the humor in his first important comedy, Every Man in His Humor, have their prototypes in the classical comedy of Plautus and Terence. But all of them are Londoner and not Romans, and the drawn not from books but observation. The jealous husband, the timid father, the corrupt son, the cunning slave or parasite, the simple girl and the boasting but cowardly soldier of Plautus and Terence have suggested Ben Jonson's Catulle, the merchant, the elder Cornwell, the younger Cornwell. In bracket, he is not corrupt indeed, but it is supposed by his father is to be so. Bracket close. Brainworm, Matthew and Stephen, the town of the country girl respectively, and Bobadil, All of them are no mere copies but represent a lively cross section of London society of the age of Ben Jonson. A critic observed regarding these characters, no more genuine sketch of London character are to be found in the annals of the drama. There are children of Jonson's own observation, and as an observer, he had saved Shakespeare few revival among his contemporaries. Advantage of the humor technique. There were some obvious advantages Jonson derived from the adoption of humor technique. The chief among them are given below. The first, it allowed him to dispense with the traditional clown or jester, the farcical laughter arising from grotesque and slapstick farce and clownery could be substituted by the class of humors. Secondly, it provided a meeting ground between classical theory and modern life. Thirdly, as the introducing of humors put the dramatic emphasis on character at the cost of incident, it threw out of favor once and for all the comedy of mere interviews. Fourth, lastly, it rendered it possible for the master of satiric comedy, the doughty champion of classicism, the most powerful Elizabethan realist, to be united in the same man. Jonson threw the massive weight of his dramatic genius against the current of popular taste and succeeded in preening the romantic excesses of Elizabethan comedy. The disadvantages. A very grave danger inherent in the envisagement and representation of humor was the possibility of falsification of human nature. The characters were apt to grow wooden and monotonous. Georgery, with Smith observed in this connection in noted comma, in the first place, the presentation of certain selected humors throughout a long play involved the playwright, as it does novelists like Dickens, in one of two risks, either of making the characters too rigid or uniform in habit, puppet-like after the fashion of the personages in the old morality, and dramatically unreal, or in the consciousness of this danger of striving to escape from it by exaggeration. In the second place, character thus fixed tend to become too simple, even when the humor is not plain study of a single folly, but a complex impression of several, with one only slightly overtopping the rest. It is hard to sustain the combination throughout the action. In order to come a close, Jonson does manage, thanks to his vigor and originality, to negotiate these dangers pretty safely. It cannot be said that his characters are only wooden figures, representative of types and embodiment of a specific trait, as are the characters of the morality play of the Middle Age. He does manage to breathe into them a life of their own. As T.S. Eliot maintains, rather partially, the sacred words, Shakespeare's character are no more alive than are the character of Jonson. In spite of their realism and vividness, Ben Jonson's humor are open the charge of being psychologically too simple. It is often said that he was not acquainted with a man in his fullness, and that he built on the surface and built but a single story. The complexities of human psyche find no expression. There is, says a critic, no light, and said the cross play and motive is apt to be neglected, and above all, he misses the inconsistency which is so powerful an element in the nature of us all. He, says another critic in noted comma, choose a general idea, cunning, folly, severity, lust, and makes a person out of it. He takes an abstract quality and putting together all the act to which it may give rise, trots it out on the stage. Stage in a man's dress. Now it is very selected from catalog of moral philosophy, sensuality, trysting for gold and preservable inclination become a personage. Sir Epicure Mammon, before the alchemist, before his friend, before his mistress, in public or alone. All his words denote a greed and pleasure and of gold, and they express nothing more. Now, it is a piece of madness gathered from the old sophist and tremendous horror of noise. This form of mental pathology become a personage morse. In order to come close. To have a humor is almost a whole time profession. It is to some extent an oversimplification of human nature amounting to its plastification. Ben Jonson's characters are to adopt R.M. Forster's phraseology in his aspect of the novel, flat and drowned characters. They are all predictable and are not capable of surprising us in a convincing way. They do not have the unpredictability of life, though they are lively and arresting. The topic, Ben Jonson's comedy of humor, over.